Hello, and you're all very welcome to the Tate today and to our third meeting, our third Enemies of Good Art public meeting. I'm going to introduce you to JJ and just say a couple of words in terms of why we're here or how we happened to come together. We asked JJ if he would chair, not as a practicing artist, but as a writer and someone who works critically within the arts. So somewhat outside of the subject, but still embedded within it. And also, it was crucial for our movement that we invite a man to join the discussion. I think in terms of motherhood, art practice, and childcare, it's a subject that can often exclude men. And we didn't want to do that and haven't wanted to do that. Because, my personal belief is that the preserve of taking care of children is still mainly the responsibility of women. Some men are also involved in that. And this came about through a series of discussions that I and Anna Shorter had shortly after we had our children, wondering how we might continue to practice and look after our children also. And our first two meetings were held within the installation The Nature of the Beast at the Whitechapel Gallery, and we're very grateful to the Tate for allowing us to meet here today in this wonderful cathedral of art and also this wonderful public space. The fact that we're on view and open to the public is important to the movement. So without any further words from me, I hand over to JJ.
Oh, thank you. I haven't done anything yet. Thanks for that, and thanks for coming. Martino asked me to chair this meeting, and I'm also under the consciousness that Martino has a manifesto to write. I'm not sure how many of you were at either of the two previous meetings, but Martino is a very dynamic advocate of these issues and wants an outcome soon, I think. Where's she gone? Oh, there you are, Martina. Yeah. To try and put together some of the kind of questions, problems, ideas, solutions that people like you and us might have around the theme of this movement and these meetings. I don't know how many people received an email only possibly a few days ago, which set out maybe four or five points. Would you mind indicating if you received that so I know what we are talking about? And who knows? Okay, good. And without being prescriptive, I thought those 5 points were useful as jumping off points. To see whether people agree, disagree, think they're too simple, think they could be better, and whether there are other points that people are actually much more concerned about than the ones that Martina and I put together over the last week. So we have about an hour and a half here. Martina is busy, or will be busy, taking a few notes as we go along. There will be two roving microphones that are here. One's here, and there's one right behind us there. And in this first hour or so, I think what I would like to do is to ask any of you to pick up on any of those points or another, any of the five kind of discussion points that we put together and sent out, so that we can start discussing in some detail what the implications of those issues are. And particularly, and this is the important thing for any kind of group that has the ambition to have a manifesto, what a solution might be. Because the one thing that I realize, I mean, Martina said, yes, it was important to involve a man. The one thing I realize as a partner to someone and as part of a couple who is looking to have a child, so I don't have kids at the moment, but it's certainly on my mind and on my partner's mind. All these issues are coming up as problems, and they're coming up as anxieties between me and my partner, around the question of whether and how it's possible to have kids in this day and age, particularly when we work, not unlike practicing artists, on a relatively precarious basis, a mixture of freelance, part-time work mixed all together with relatively short-term guarantees. And so, given that we're both in our mid-30s, all these issues are just as important for me as I suspect they are for people here. And I, for one, am looking for a lot of advice. Because it's starting to get a bit pressing now. So, if I can open it up to you, if you'd like to quickly say, raise your hand and grab for the mic, just briefly say who you are, not necessarily your life story, just a name, and pick up on perhaps pick up on one of the things that have been offered to the meeting in the agenda which was set out. Now, who's raring to go?
Can you mention that it's going out on resonance?
Oh, yes.
Mic's close to mouth.
Okay. Quick note about the microphones. This is being recorded for Resonance FM, who will be editing or will be broadcasting an edited version of this and I think a story on this. So when you do get the mic, if you want to speak to it pretty much like I'm doing here, not right there and not over here, but sort of about 4 inches away. So photographs, that's a good question also. No. It's a technical administrative. It's about who's photographing and what they're for. Ah, which is a good point.
Oh yes. I advertise with each meeting that each meeting will be documented by way of photographs and video, and audio also, audio for radio purposes, photographs for our website and video also. So that we can document the movement from its very early stages. So if you're here, you know you're going to be photographed. I hope everybody's happy with that. Possibly for press reasons also. The question was, how can parents access that? They'll be up on the website.
Okay, so with that resolved, it's over to you. If you just want to sign at me so that I can point the microphones to you quickly and efficiently. Ah, good. Starting with a man for the first time.
Hi, my name's Adam Brumberg and I'm partner of Sarah Entwistle. This is probably a particularly male response, but there's two things that I've noticed since even before our child Lenny was born. One is this thing I called this kind of tyranny of optimism around children and childbirth, and that not all of the feelings that I was feeling or Sarah was feeling were wholly positive. We had our doubts and we had our worries about it, and I felt there was very little space to discuss those issues. And I think that leads into something interesting about our practice, is that it's the only kind of way out of that cul-de-sac is to think of it in an anthropological sense, in a way you're greeted by the community with such optimism because you're continuing the species. And it's a kind of opposite of a critical approach. And that's the tension I've felt, is somehow you're seen as this purely optimistic kind of conduit, and it's opposite of a kind of critical, analytical approach. I don't know if this is making any sense.
Well, can I ask you, if you were not this optimistic person or identity or... could you say a little bit about the kind of apprehensions, anxieties, worries that seemed more to the fore in your experience? Because I think that's where we can start to move towards some of the broader debates.
Yeah. You mean what were my particular concerns?
Yours.
I think one is whether, you know, whether it is a good thing to bring a child into the world right now was a clear one for me. And also the kind of concerns that I had as a practitioner about my practice is or has been particularly kind of reckless in its nature, and this is the opposite of the kind of death drive. So in a psychoanalytical sense, it's this idea of, oh my God, this is all about preservation and growth rather than challenging those things. So I think those two things were my personal worries.
Okay. Yes, that's obviously provoked a few responses.
I'll do it before he starts crying. my name's Leave Pennington. I think one of the biggest concerns for me was whether or not my children would become a prop within the work that I make, because it's constantly reactive. And so how does that fit in? Are you allowed to kind of use and visually abuse or exclude your children? And that's something that I've noticed a lot, that children kind of disappear within contemporary artwork. It's okay to kind of make work about losing a child, your mother, parents, that kind of upwards parental role, but not downwards. And if it is about children, it's whether or not it's kind of gushy and kind of, it still seems very excluded. So how do we, how can we get supported in a practice that doesn't want to actually include them visually, is my sort of concerns at the moment. Do you want the microphone?
Can I mean, do people here have a strong reaction to what Adam suggested about what good are children?
I was going to say that before I had Dana, my work was also quite chaotic and quite perhaps destructive on that edge. And I've noticed, because I paint at home, and she's very interested in what I paint, that I've started to censor my work visually because I don't want it to disturb her. So there is an interest, you know, a dynamic, definitely, for me around that.
Actually, me also. I mean, before I had Sunny, I was going to crack houses and photographing Pete Doherty and porn studios and photographing it to porn sets, and I was doing everything that was dangerous and trying to. And then I got pregnant and everything stopped, and I had to reassess who I was as an artist, and I didn't work for a year because I thought, I don't want to do pretty pictures. What am I going to do? What am I going to do? And then suddenly my work's completely started to change and take more of a social level in a different route, and I'm really glad now. He's made my work so much more, you know, I'd never have done the work I'm doing now if I hadn't have had a child.
There's similar experiences of changing one's practice because of the experience of a certain format of childcare. Because I think that's, I mean, I don't know whether that's got some substance to it. I might want to investigate that more.
Thank you. Hang on a sec, Otis. Hi, Abigail Reynolds. I suppose I, is that about the right distance? I've got two children, so I'm going to have to leave to pick up the other one soon. But my experience has been that it's made me change my practice in the sense that before I was working on big, more public projects, and that became really difficult to manage, you know, moving around, staying in different places. So I really pared my practice down. And I, again, would echo, I don't know your name, but what you were saying about it actually being really useful because it made me focus much better. It made me use my time much, much more. And for me, I didn't want my experience as a mother particularly to enter my work. That wasn't particularly interesting for me. But I do find that it's actually pushed my work on in a really useful way and probably just made me, I think the experience of being a mother made me just have to cut out everything that wasn't completely essential. And that I found a really beneficial and invigorating experience that I sort of feel like if I hadn't had children, I would be still doing quite a lot more faffing about, which actually it's really good not to do. My offering. Any? Thank you.
I'm really interested in what you said about your work prior to having a baby had some sort of death wish element. And I'm wondering whether that's a macho type of work drive, essentially. And it's partly connected, I was speaking to a photojournalist this morning who knew that I was coming to this meeting and knew what it was about. And he mentioned that there was some sort of word that went out that when he had children, oh, that was the point at which his great war photography kind of stopped. And then it was a question mark over what is he now as a photographer. And I'm just wondering whether that death wish sort of drive is essentially a macho thing, which is obviously can still be part of female practice, but is something that is quite clearly negated by the act of nurturing a child.
But there's one of our speakers mentioned that she was visiting crack dens, as in a documentary mode. Because Kat, would you?
Macho as well, can't she?
Well, would you mind, or maybe we should ask you a bit about what you think about what Kat has just said. It's not particular. Is it a male thing? I'm not sure.
I'm not sure. I the work was for me about. It was like a Lord of the Flies scenario, and I was just really interested about the dimensions to a heightened degree with drug addiction going on. And it wasn't really about the crack as such, just the dynamics within the group and how the extremes of human nature. But it did come to a very natural end. It was like just as I got pregnant, the guy got evicted. And I just left it at that stage. I just left it there. And then the studio closed down. So it was all very natural. But I did, like, I was so lost after, you know, with the pregnancy because I thought, oh, my God, what am I about now? For me, it was like my work's always had a documentary element, so maybe it's a hedonistic view. I mean, I was footloose, fancy free. I had no ties. I could go, come as I like. I could disappear for 3 days on a project. I could come home when I wanted. And suddenly, having a child, you can't do that. You can't disappear off and do these things because I had another life to consider. And I felt actually very vulnerable, even though it was thought of doing that work now, because of the thought of not being around for him terrified me. So I just left it at that. And yeah, my work's completely changed now. I started drawing, I started painting, and I don't know, I just wanted to make stuff. I had this urge that I couldn't describe to be very crafty and relearn skills and go to college and do ceramics, stuff that I'd never even considered before. So I don't know. It is a hedonistic life, though, I was leading, because I was a photojournalist working for newspapers and then doing these projects on the side. So, yeah, I suppose I left it. Probably. Yeah, probably was changing.
Sorry, Kat, it's best if we get this on tape, so, which requires a certain concision and, yeah, tempo.
I can't remember what I was going to say now. So,
changing.
We have a brief message from Liz here.
Okay, can I just respond to some requests we've had from some parents who are a little bit concerned about the amount of documentation that was going on? I think Martina has explained the reason for some photography and video being taken, but it's really important that people who don't want to be photographed don't feel they have to be. So we're suspending stills photography till 1 o'clock, and if you prefer not to be video recorded, if you're just in this area of the room, then you won't be caught on video. Perhaps people who are looking after the video cameras can just confirm that's so. Okay, so otherwise anybody using stills cameras will resume that at 1 o'clock, but it's really important that this is a very kind of frank democratic discussion. So, you know, no more photography until 1 o'clock, please. Thanks, everybody. Back to you.
Thank you. Maybe there's some questions there in that intervention that need unpacking too later. But the question seems to, or it seems to me that there's an issue of the studio, actually. Or rather, that the studio is actually a place where child caring and having the child around at the same time as working becomes a reality. That seems to kind of cut into an idea of what privacy is, or rather what individual and domestic life is for an artist. This question of how far an individual can range in their practice, is quite, I think, connects to the problem of how much we expect to be able to pursue the practice that we had before, regardless of the needs of children. This is a very practical point, in as much as it's simply to do, surely, with how much time one has away from one's kids to do what one does. And I wonder whether there some people have something to say about that. I mean, I'd be curious about Adam's initial suggestion, because I know some of Adam's work, and particularly a project where you were embedded with a bunch of, is it British or American? British, Iraq, tour of Afghanistan, sorry, yes. It's embedded with a cohort of UK British troops in Afghanistan. And that was obviously for some time. How long were you away for? 2 weeks, but long enough. So certainly there's something not trivial about the relationship between the kinds of work that can be pursued and one's responsibilities to both the home and the studio. And I would be interested to see if that's a common or an important question. I mean, certainly the idea that one's art changes because of the context of being a parent and also caring for them on a fairly sort of full-time basis. Because I don't think that the two are separate. The two are necessarily the same thing. Being a parent and then taking the time to care for a child for X many months, years, and so on is perhaps a matter of choice, not necessarily necessity. And I'm curious about people's opinions of that. I don't want to lead this discussion too far, but I think that's certainly, we've seen a few things in what people have said that lead to that.
Sorry, me again. I was going to agree with Joe in terms of there is definitely a noticeable change in, not necessarily materials, but almost the need to make still life something that you can drop and walk away from, something that will stay safe from your children, but you can kind of ongoing. So I started learning Photoshop on the basis that you could always just press save and save as and walk away, and there would be this work waiting for me when I ever got that other half an hour, that other hour to walk back to. But it is, I really like that idea of, I think, of craft re-entering, that need to make, I don't know if it comes from baking or getting messy, but being allowed to be physical again. When within photography, a lot of the time it's quite clean and avoidance of mess. But I've noticed that people's cameras have changed, so those people, mothers who used to shoot on 5.4 now shoot on 35 or shoot on digital. Because you won't have access to carrying the camera, pushing the pusher, and actually ever getting to the darkroom. So digital has entered and taken over for a completely different set of reasons. I don't know if anyone else wants to talk about change of materials.
I'd just like to echo again what you said, that now I've got kids, I feel like out of my studio time, I want a result. I want to have made something with my hands, and I want to, have this thing that I can then, that is outside of me, that I can then have a dialogue with later. And very much as well for me, being able to move my practice to one where I can just drop it and pick it up. So the minute that people are asleep or in bed, they don't have to be asleep, but they just have to be not needing me anymore, then I can just pick it up. And you can get a lot done while they're asleep, but you have to have the kind of practice that's flexible in that kind of way. And a lot of practices are anyway, but I suppose my personal practice moved in exactly the ways that you've suggested. And I really enjoy it, actually. I sort of think I enjoy it more than the way my practice was before, so that's been a real bonus.
Abigail, can I just ask, I mean, this is a question to Abigail, but to everyone too. It seems to me that you're saying that the space of care is also the space of practice. I mean, I'm curious about this idea of the studio.
And
where it is and what happens there.
I moved my studio into the flat when they were really little, and now I work at home when they're asleep, but I also keep a studio because I feel the house is just... If somebody else is caring for them, and that, actually...
use art students quite often as carers because they're quite cheap and sort of that. Sorry? It's probably exploitation, but I do pay them. But if they're in the house, if they're in the flat with me, then it's impossible to get headspace. So in the daytime, and also they do go to nursery, so half a day. So I guess I end up, what's really happened is that all my studio had to become very close to the flat. So I used to have a studio in Camberwell. I moved to one that was really close to the flat. So my world's kind of studio, nursery and flat have to be really close because I just can't spend time travelling anymore. And, you know, I need everything to be at hand's reach. And so I've actually really extensively reorganised my life so that everything is close. So it only takes 5 minutes for me to walk from the flat to the studio with my laptop, which is really lucky, and not everybody can do that, but I really had to prioritise that, or it just felt like every time I was moving from Camberwell to somewhere else, I was just shedding work time.
My name's Jo Jolson. Can you hear me? I'm here with my partner, Bruce Gilchrist, and we collaborate under the name
Can we get that mic up a little bit more? Sorry. So some people won't hear it over here.
Is that better?
Yeah.
Okay.
Say that again.
So my name's Jo. I'm here with my partner, Bruce. We collaborate under London Fieldworks. And I think when we had a child, we made a conscious effort to maintain our practice in the way that it had been beforehand. And I think maybe I'm listening to people here, I feel maybe in a uniquely different position in that I have an entirely equal relationship with my partner in terms of childcare and art practice. And so if there are negotiations in terms of, well, you know, there's something very concentrated piece of writing that has to be done, then we decide who's going to kind of do that on one day, etc. I'm just getting the feel that a lot of the women who have spoken here are the sole carers, and I'm just wondering whether, you know, their practice in the studio can be done when their partners are perhaps looking after the children. I'm just getting a bit of a one-way street feel at the moment.
Yeah, my name is Eva Stenram. I just wanted to kind of give an opposite view to Abigail's in that I find it totally impossible to work during nap times or when I have like half an hour to get something done. And there's enough other stuff to do, like load the dishwasher or whatever. So I find that's really difficult, and I find the only way that I can work is to have my partner look after my daughter or to have a childcare arrangement where I can actually go to the studio for a whole solid day and get a proper amount of work done. So yeah, I just wanted to give that as a kind of different view after Joe.
I think I'm going to have to go in a minute, but I think a lot of it depends on the kind of parenting choices that you make, because, for instance, if you choose breastfeeding over bottle feeding and etc., that all has implications in terms of how much child care you can use and when you can start using it. And I had lots of very nice ideas about 50-50 split, and so did my partner, and we didn't realise that actually, if you do choose to breastfeed, that's not particularly easy to facilitate. Well, it wasn't for us, maybe because of the type of child we had. That's the other thing, is you can have lots of ideas about it, and then your child turns out completely different than you thought, you know. So something that I feel a bit sad about is that a lot of the artist parents that I've met can't wait to get rid of their children to childcare, and I find that really sad that we're in that position of having to either send your kid off out or have somebody in to look after it, or do your art. It's a really difficult sort of place to be, and I'm not quite sure where I'm in it yet, but she wants to go, so I'm off, but thank you.
Can one over here. Sorry, the lady in the white trousers over here. Yes.
Sorry.
Hello, I'm Ana Laura. I think it's interesting to hear people talk, because there is a lot of talk about like choice and choosing to do this, and you know, like just about the practice and the changes in the kind of medium that you might use. And for me, what it was interesting was to do actually with income, because I used to subsidize my work with other types of work, so I could do whatever I wanted. So I didn't have to enter in relationships with institutions. When I had my child, I'm the sole income earner in my family, and I don't have any independent wealth to support me. So the issue of income was very, very important. Suddenly I realized that I hadn't had the choice of deciding I wanted to stay at home. I had to go and earn money to pay the rent, because I did try to live on welfare, and it was impossible. It was just like not possible to live on welfare. The quality of life was just like too bad, so I had to go and work. What I find is that actually I was pushed to take up practice full time, because there was not enough time to have another job and then to do art. So I had to actually enter into a much more institutionally driven practice, in which I started to work on commission and to respond to invitations by institutions, which is not something that as an artist I was interested in doing. With time, I think I'm just beginning to disentangle myself from that. But I think the issue of income and who brings the money that pays the rent and buys the food is quite, for me, that's me. You know, I'm a single parent. You know, my daughter's father, although he has a relationship with her, he's not someone that contributes anything financially, child care-wise, to the family. So that brings perhaps the issue of class and the backgrounds of people and the kind of different possibilities that different people have of having choices, whether to stay at home, whether to do that type of work or another. So just like to bring that other element into the discussion.
Can I maybe point this a little bit to that question, the point that came up over here about being sad or disappointed by other artists wanting to get rid of their children to childcare as soon as possible? Because it seems to me that it's not so much nowadays that we have a discussion about whether childcare is or isn't available, or whether it costs this or that, but also whether we have a certain ambivalence to how we effectively get rid of a certain kind of responsibility to childcare, and whether we feel somehow guilty or somehow perturbed by what that means. It seems to me that coming back from a family visit in Belgium, where my cousin has just had his first child with his partner, and their son is now a year old, and we went to visit them at just after Christmas, and his partner was pretty much already back to work, and their son was in a creche at the age of 6 months, pretty much 5 days a week, and it was affordable. So I talked to this to Martina a little bit about this, because as an experience it was a little bit shocking to discover that they, as parents who are very loving and very caring, were very ready and able, and that there was an infrastructure available to them that meant that already at the age of 6 months, their child could be in full-time childcare, pretty from, you know, say 9 o'clock till five. So I'm very interested in why it should be seen, or why some people might see that one is somehow getting rid of one's child to childcare, and that might be seen as a negative thing. Because some of these tensions are very much about responsibility and the quality of responsibility, or the character of it.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm really going to have to go soon, unfortunately, yep. So I apologise if I've spoken a lot, but I will then go. I just really want to say something about this, because I feel that there's a lot of... I feel like I want to feel like I live in a society where people can make their own decisions based on their economic circumstances, their family circumstances. Some mothers, or parents rather, use grandparents a lot because that's available to them. Other people don't have that option. Some people use friends. That's an option that may be open to people or not. And I feel like I want to feel that we can all make our own choices and without judging too much. So I personally spend a lot of money on childcare, and also want to come back to the idea about whether you're, what was the word used? exploiting people by getting them to look after your children. I pay more than the minimum wage for somebody to come and look after my children at my house. Sometimes they go to nursery, which is a lot more expensive, but I like the idea of nursery because they socialise with other kids. And I feel that, you know, as long as your children have, well, I suppose I sort of feel like I want to spend more time with my children than other people do. But at some point, that's going to break down. They're going to go to school anyway. And also, oh, hello.
Hello. Oh, Judy.
Yeah, thank you. Good point. Thank you. He's saying, go, you've talked too much now. But, yeah, so just to think about that, in some ways, I am desperate to get rid of my children's childcare sometimes because I want to hang on to myself as a maker, as an artist, and my sense of myself is really bound up with that. And for me, that's not something that I can completely compromise because otherwise I'll just be depressed. And what's the good of that? So, yeah, I think, but I feel that there's places, sorry, for all different kinds of options.
Can we have a person in the pink top? Yep.
Hi, I'm Naglat Walker. I was just going to say that I didn't really understand that point about, you know, getting rid of your children, because after all, I think most people here are arranging childcare so they can do work. It's not like you're going to have a pedicure or a manicure or whatever. I have found myself in a position where I actually can't work in my practice. I've got 4 small children under 3, so that's just what happened, and I want to be able to work at some point, but I definitely wouldn't feel guilty arranging help if I felt that was what I could do, if I felt my headspace was there.
Yeah, Kat again?
Is that working? Just building on that, the idea of feeling guilty about handing your child into childcare, surely that's bound up with the idea that there should be presumably a woman looking after a child and in a purely domestic setting. And what I'm not sure that doesn't marry up with my life as an adult woman at all. And I'm not sure that a child requires to have this kind of pure domestic setting as their only setting whilst they're growing up, even in the early years.
Do you think that that is something which is too... Precisely that worry is too evident in contemporary attitudes about what quality child growth is. Because it seems to me that one of the aspects of being a parent these days is it seems a lot harder, not in physical and practical terms, but in conceptual terms. It seems to be that every time you open a newspaper, someone is trying to tell you that you could be parenting better. And so it seems there's a huge amount of public worrying about what it means to be a good parent, which is somehow kind of inimical or destructive to being able to quite simply say, this is what I need, this is what I, you know, require to get on, both as a parent and as an artist.
I mean, certainly my feeling as a new parent, a young parent, as in my child is still very young, I've only got one, is I do feel like there's a big isolation of parenting. It's like it's become this sort of separate section of your life, and it's been given this sort of isolated place. All the main broadsheets have a family section in the same way they have their art section and their travel section. There's the family section, and I don't really understand. That doesn't marry up with my understanding of myself and my small family in this world. You know, I feel very much part of everything, part of working life. Robin's part of our working life. She travels with us when we have to go places to work, and we do some of our work in her environment, some of it away. So I feel that as a one bound up thing, and I don't feel that it's important. I feel it would be, it would diminish her experience and her growth and quality time if she didn't experience any of us as working adults.
Yeah. I'm kind of keen to sort of pick out things which might be kind of points of consensus or emerging agreement at the same time as looking for people who strongly disagree. Because I think that, certainly for me, you know, the last time I was tuning into, I don't know, some bit of Radio 4, I was listening to a quite strange debate between two people, one of whom assured the reader, the listener and her host that on a scientific basis, if you let your child cry when they're a baby, it's possibly going to damage their brain, right? So the notion of the worry and anxiety about the responsibility of even of you know early child rearing, child development, and later psychosocial abilities and so on, seem to be very prominent. So that whilst we sort of fetishize parenthood and certainly early parenthood in a you know in those kinds of Sunday supplement ways, we also have a seem to have a culture where we're very worried about the business of being a parent all the time. Now I don't know if that's just the way I see what the media represent, and it's completely different if you're a parent, because I'm not a parent. So I'd like to know a little bit more about whether the anxieties about how to parent are very much influenced by external factors. Ava?
I was just going to say, you probably don't have time to read all that once you are a parent. So I think maybe you learn to trust your own instincts a bit more. I don't know. That's what I found.
Any others? Yeah.
Someone waiting there as well.
Rather than kind of dole out any advice, which I don't think I've got any good advice, I think intuition is, it does kind of kick in when you have your own child. But just to kind of get back onto the subject for art for 1 minute, I think that it's all our responsibilities now we're parents to kind of help to change the social scene to make it more inclusive of children, because certainly the art scene can be a very exclusive place and a very adult kind of world where kids are sort of frowned upon because they get in the way of drinking and you know, gallery openings and all that kind of thing. I feel quite out of the loop since I've had a child, because I go to galleries and I take my child, and quite often it's quite difficult because, you know, it's an alien world for children and they're not allowed to touch things and everything is cordoned off and people, the security people, look very concerned. And I do think that it's important for institutions like Tate and other big organisations with lots of money behind them to start to think about integrating children in some way into their big exhibitions, just factoring that idea in, because it's really important for children to have a sense of art from early on. And I think that's an important thing to push, especially in a group like this.
Can I just go slightly back to an earlier point made there about the opening night or the preview? Is it the case that one disappears from the scene partly because one is no longer in that social space? I mean, I remember the first time I ever saw a couple of kids happily at an opening was slung over Gavin Turk's shoulder. You know, Gavin never had a problem with his kids at an opening. I don't know if it's because he was just terrifically confident, or that they were completely happy and relaxed and would sleep on the floor if necessary. Okay,
sorry.
Right. But anyway, I'd like to kind of maybe talk about that as well, please. Ava's.
I mean, I think it's different for different children. And I mean, my daughter hates going to private views, and she gets really worried with a lot of people, so I don't take her, and it's much better for me if I need to go to private view not to have her, because I can actually talk to people and not have to look after her all the time. So I think this is a case where we want to have accessible childcare, or that there are cheap forms of childcare or things like that, that we can actually go out and do the work that we want to do at times. I also totally kind of disagree with the point that we should kind of make museums accessible to children. I think that is, for me, not the purpose of art. They're not playgrounds for children. And I would much rather take her to a good, you know, take kids to a good adventure playground or to something that they actually enjoy. And I'm not sure if they need to be merged.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
Someone doesn't. Who doesn't agree with that? Do you want to pick?
Sorry.
Sorry, this lady over here.
I just was going to say that I agree that I don't think the museum is the place for the children to be running
around with the exhibition. But on the other hand, in my situation, there's an exhibit here that I'd like to see. And in fact, I'm not going to pay to see an exhibit where I'm spending 50% of my energy making sure that my child is okay and not being destructive. And I don't have the childcare to be able to come from Stamford Hill in to see the exhibit and enjoy myself and relax and back again in time. So maybe there's a way, and I don't know what that would be, to have it both ways. Maybe there's a creche in the museum. Maybe there's a person who goes with the mommies who want to see the exhibit at 1 o'clock on Fridays. I don't know. There might be a solution for that, because I really feel like I can't, I mean, I moved here from New York, but I can't see art the way I would when I've got my attention on my kid.
Hello. Sorry, yes. Well, if you want to speak, please wave at me. I understand. I'm trying to scan everybody, but stick your hand up and I'll get you.
So just also to talk about... Hello?
Yeah.
Okay. Talk about ages too, because I think there is something when you have a baby, they are very portable and very mobile, and you can carry them with you and you can travel and they can be part of your life. Schooling has a major impact in your life, because when you school your children, first you are bound by the school calendar. So basically you cannot pick your holidays, you cannot pick when you're going to be away, you have to be there, and you have to be there at certain time to drop and to pick up, and your life gets very, very grounded on a location. And also your children start to have their own ideas. So, you know, I might have taken my daughter to private views and here and there, and now she tells me, another exhibition, I'm not going. So they start to develop their own identity. For me, I think that maybe it has to do with my practice, that is very concerned with just being part of people's life, and that everybody can actually access that where they live. So I'm a community artist, so that's quite important. I think I make a point that anything that I put on, exhibition, events, that they are accessible for people with children, that they can come and the children would have something to do, which is not mean that the work is for the children. It's not like a playground kind of fun installation, but that they can do something. And I had recently an exhibition in Gasworks, and I asked, you know, I set up the play area in the main exhibition space, and the gallery, the curator was saying, can we put this in another room, in the education room? And I really insisted that it was kind of like part of the main exhibition space. And the exhibition was absolutely not for children. It was quite information heavy, but they had something that they could do. And it worked very, very well. And parents stayed there for 3-4 hours going through the material, and the kids were quite happy playing, and they didn't, and even in the private view, it worked. So I think it's also about, you know, not that it had to be for them, but that there is something for them. But that has to do, I guess, with your politics, of the politics of your work, and how you want to live in the world, too.
Kat?
Yeah, and just building on that, it sounds fantastic. I don't know. I think also there's a question here about, I don't know which exhibit it was that you wanted to see here, but certainly I saw the Francis Elise the other day when I was down with Martina having a look around here for this meeting. And Robin was with me that day, and we went actually flyering around that show for this event. But it was the first time that I'd seen that exhibit, and certainly Frances Elise's work works for children. I mean, Robin's only just under 2, and the space, the way that space is organized, allows for a child to be present without... Also, his work seems to be very much more direct, let's say, than other exhibits. So it's maybe it's also a question of who your audience is. If you're making work that's very much for a public audience, probably that work's not going to be too imbalanced by the presence of children who are essentially anarchic and have an anarchic energy. But a work made with a public audience in mind perhaps has an energy that doesn't get disrupted. You know, you can still read it basically when there's some frenzied activity going on, whereas a work made purely for an art audience perhaps can't handle the actual presence of real life in the room with it. And I think that's an important question for artists who are questioning how do you continue practice, because I think obviously the spaces that contain art are very much bound up with our practice. So And for example, a museum like this is a public museum, you know, it's not a private, exclusive place.
Can I just suggest that the thing that you've missed out in those terms is the word adult, that part of this seems to be about the kind of the nature of what it means to be a grown-up or to be an adult in public, to be in public civil society as an individual adult responsible person, and whether that's simply a kind of throwback to the male middle-class spectator.
I think I'd definitely say it is, and I think your attitude might change once you have children if you're part of the childcare.
Well, the critical issue I'm noting there is whether there's work that children can be around, and what it means to, because I was at Story Gallery up in Lancaster the day before last, and they have the show curated by Olivia Plender called There Is No Alternative, and it's a very video and text heavy show, and whilst I was watching one of these videos, two mums came in with two kids, and it was very obvious that what these two adults needed was some time with the show to get to grips with what are complex discussions of the global economy and the relationship of art to it, which was probably not helped by having two children around, quite simply. So what I'm curious about is not so much is the nature of art as an adult activity. I don't mean that in a kind of salacious sense. I just mean it in terms of something that simply excludes children. Because that's its nature.
No, it's not its nature. Absolutely disagree with that.
Okay. I don't know if anybody else cares about that point.
I think I'm a bit of a lone voice here as well. I don't actually... I prefer to not involve my child so much in my art making or my going out to galleries. And I think when a lot of people have been speaking about taking the children to galleries, it's not actually because they want to, it's because they don't have another arrangement for childcare. And I think that's maybe the point here, that, you know, in our society, maybe grandparents aren't around to help or families aren't available because everyone works full-time, etc.
I just want to continue sort of what Kat was talking about, because I think that certainly for me as an artist, I want to be able to go to galleries when I feel like it. I don't want it to revolve around a time when, you know, my son might be at nursery, and I want him to be involved in our world, which is about making art most of the time. And I think that when you have when your life is making art most of the hours of a day, you just have to integrate them somehow. So, you know, maybe your opinion will change, because actually I find that sort of barrier very, very difficult to sort of cross, because a lot of people here are saying they have problems with getting enough childcare, or and so their practice becomes something very separate to their relationship with their child, and I couldn't make that work for us. So that I didn't mean that art has to become child friendly. I mean that the institution has to become a bit more child-friendly, so that, for example, as this lady mentioned in her exhibition, there was an area that absolutely welcomed kids and parents, families, so that they could get on with looking at art in the adult sense.
Lady, yes. What's your name, by the way?
Joe.
Joe.
My opinion is that London in general is pretty anti-child. I don't go near Spitalfields Market because there's nothing we can do there. There's no place. When I had a very young child, there was no place to breastfeed. There was no place to change the child. Things like that. If I had another job, would I introduce? Well, if I was an engineer, would I introduce Sunny into engineering? No. But I tell you what you can do as a mother, and that is to give a well-rounded thing for your child to do. Like, for example, we went to Hyde Park the other day. He fell asleep. I went to the Serpentine Gallery. If he was awake, he was awake. It's, you're always going to be tired. You're always going to be knackered. He's all, they're there. They're there for the 20 years of your life. You've just got to get on with it. Maybe more, well, forever, you know, but for 20 years, you are constantly there virtually. So you've just got to get on with it. I mean, I spoke to a curator in Norway, and she said, I was pregnant, and I was, like, really panicking about, is this going to be the end for me? And she said, Joe, an artist can work all night. I sometimes work all night when he's in bed. I just try and do my hours. I'm at a really, like... I'm like, maybe I'm luckier than being a 9-to-5er because I can do these things where I can sleep for a few hours in the day, work through the night. It's like you just got to like find your rhythm, and everyone has a different rhythm, and it's not, you know, the child, I think he's aware that I like to paint and stuff because he picks up a paintbrush and smothers the house with it. But it's no different from having another job, I think. You know, all this stuff about artists. It's just difficult, whatever job you have. Having a child is difficult.
Anita, just quickly pass over to Liz, briefly again, with regards to photography.